I'm David McClay. I'm curator of the Picturing Africa exhibition. So this year, 2013, sees the bicentennial of the birth of David Livingstone, that great national hero, famed for his missionary endeavours in Africa, his wonderful discoveries, and of course, the famous books which he wrote, which were lavishly illustrated and part of their great popularity. But these illustrations were the result not just of the efforts of David Livingstone, but of artists like Thomas Baines, photographers like John Kirk, and the publisher, John Murray. And this exhibition, Picturing Africa, Illustrating Livingstone's Travels, tells that story. An essential for any book, and particularly for a book of travel, is an illustration of the author. David Livingstone, however, being modest, didn't want a portrait, but his publisher, John Murray, insisted. In the exhibition, we have the original oil painting and the engraving which was made from it to illustrate his books. However, David Livingstone was far from happy with the portrait. He complained to Mrs. Murray, "I don't much like it. It makes me look a great deal too stern." To which she replied, "I've seen your face look very much like that, Dr. Livingstone." Livingstone also complained to Mr. Murray, his publisher, writing that all his friends cried out against it, saying it would pass for anyone from Captain Cook to Guy Fawkes. However, Murray insisted, and the portrait was engraved and illustrated the tens of thousands of copies of Livingstone's books. Whilst David Livingstone was a man of many talents, artistic ones were not amongst them, as we can see from his little diaries, which have his scribbled notes as well as his little doodles, which are quite crude. But fortunately, his Zambezi expedition did have an artist of both great talent and proficiency. And here we have in the exhibition 12 watercolours by Thomas Baines. Thomas Baines was both an accomplished artist but a great documentary recorder of the Livingstone expedition. And here we can see, particularly in the riverscapes, his undoubted talent in representing both the landscape, people and animals. David Livingstone's Zambezi expedition, as well as having artists, had two photographers, Charles Livingstone, David's brother, and John Kirk. John Kirk's photography was far more successful, as we can see. Although his process required a long exposure, it meant he couldn't get animals, he couldn't have people, but he could very successfully photograph boats, landscapes, trees, huts, and we have many examples of his successful photography here. And if you compare his raw photographs with the finished engravings and illustrations from Livingstone's books, you can see how the two supported each other. Livingstone, with literary manuscript in hand, returned to London with his photographs, with his drawings, and he went to the greatest travel publisher of the age, John Murray III. And it was he who had to put up with Livingstone's demanding ways. "I reject in toto every piece of red ink on my manuscript. The artist is a buffoon. I wish the artist had been married to the pig-faced lady and the divorce courts abolished." Letter after letter, Livingstone demanded that his text and his illustrations should be exactly as he wanted them. Just as well that he did. This was the success of Livingstone's books. They were written in his own style and not the general style of the day. And here we can see the woodblock illustrations and the proof pages, the many complicated stages which each of the 45 or 50 illustrations per book had to go through. Hard work, but work that had a wonderful, beautiful end. And what success the book had. Look here just at the first year's accounts. Livingstone, used to £150 wages as a missionary, received a staggering amount of £5,342 as his share in the work. All that hard work getting the text and illustrations right was worth it. And not only that, they were able to take the money from the success of missionary travels to fund the next expedition along the Zambezi. Welcome to Africa, Livingstone's Africa. And before us on this map, we can see the main routes in which he travelled, 30,000 miles in all, and the main events and locations in which he was associated with. And in the display cases, we can explore some of these incidents, some of these places in a little more detail. For example, the famous lion attack. Perhaps the most famous of all the incidents in Livingstone's life, his survival of a lion attack became iconic, both in text but particularly in images, especially when Livingstone became a popular topic for children's books. children, you see, when forced to read about missionaries and men of admirable character, would often get bored, but not when there was an exciting lion attack to promote the work, and it was often used for the cover illustration, and indeed, as we can see here, was used in chocolate cards, SO cards and Stanimer trousers well after Livingstone's own death. Following his dismissal from the Livingstone expedition, Thomas Baines made his own way to Victoria Falls, and there he extensively sketched and recorded that great natural phenomenon and tried to capture it in illustrations. And my goodness, he was successful. Perhaps the most beautiful pictures of the day, perhaps the most beautiful pictures of Victoria Falls that have ever been created. Beautiful hand-painted illustrations, and even blown up here in the exhibition to 11 feet high. The detail is dazzling. Baines complained about the many difficulties of trying to capture such natural beauty, as well as the practical difficulties, from tsetse flies annoying you at the vital moment to having to suffer from wet shoes, wet trousers, and even more importantly, wet paper. Perhaps the success of Livingstone's books alone were enough to make these images iconic, but they were to have a second and third and fourth life. Yes, these wonderful illustrations were also to appear in newspapers. The great breakthrough of the Victorian period was cheap, affordable, illustrated newspapers like the Graphic and the Illustrated London News, and Livingstone was a great subject for them, particularly because great illustrations were ready-made to be reproduced. And not just in the tens of thousands in which his books appeared, but in hundreds of thousands, a quarter of a million and more copies of the Graphic and the Illustrated London News appearing with his pictures, driving the numbers close to a million of each of these images. But it didn't end there. Magic lantern shows, the great Victorian entertainment, reproduced these images again and again to an even wider audience. But it didn't even end there, because in the early 20th century, as magic lantern shows started to fade, the silver screen burst into life, and Livingstone films became a regular feature. The first, and arguably the greatest, was Livingstone, produced in 1925 at great expense and shot on location for almost a year, with Livingstone's own books and his own illustrations as a guide to how the film should be shot. Although a commercial failure, it enlivened people again to the image of Livingstone and Livingstone's Africa. Perhaps the most controversial area of Livingstone's travels and the illustrations which they helped produce was to do with slavery, that brutal and inhuman trade for which he fought so hard against. We can see from his letter here the idea of a drawing of a slaver and a slave stick and a slave. This, through the various stages of the drawings and the woodblocks, eventually became beautiful illustrations in his book, but ones that also shocked, really raised people's awareness of the brutality of the slave trade. One of the most controversial incidents in Livingstone's life was the death of his wife and her burial in Africa. And the illustration which was created for his book, Off the Grave, was a very carefully constructed piece of propaganda. We can see the sources that were used. A photograph by John Kirk taken on the day of the funeral, sketches made shortly after, both of the house nearby and of the tree and the grave. With the watercolour sketches working up, we can see the difficulties that the artist and the author struggled with in terms of accuracy. But they didn't want to be accurate. They didn't want to show the grave, the lonely grave, with no civilization nearby, so the house was transported half a mile closer to the grave to make it look more civilized. And it was this image that became iconic and indeed helped sanctify both Mary Livingstone and the grave. Indeed, magic lantern slides and commercially available little photographs of the grave circulated around at that time, and we have some of those commercially available photographs of the grave here. Quite poignantly, these ones were owned by David Livingstone and Mary Livingstone's daughter Agnes, and she's written on them Mama's Grave in Africa. The grave became such a popular place and site that when the tree and the grave marker was removed, the wood was used to make into holy relics, and we have a box here made from wood from the grave of Mary Livingstone. A sacred site which contrasts quite strongly with David Livingstone's national entombment in Westminster, as we can see from the newspaper illustration in full pomp and ceremony, quite a contrast to that of his wife. Perhaps the most important illustrations to Livingstone's books were the maps, for these were the ones that allowed people to walk in the steps of Livingstone to make sense of all the illustrations in the book. Here we have four of the original maps, drawn by Livingstone on location, folded up in his pocket, but here unfolded so that you can see all the detail. And what detail? Every inch is covered with scribbled writing and little symbols and marks, because he recorded not just geographical information, but details of which tribes were to be trusted, and more importantly, which ones not, where that various animals were, which places might have potential for cotton. And in these details, people could walk in the footsteps of Livingstone. Near the end of his life, in much pain, Livingstone continued to write in his journals all that he'd seen, including slave massacres and other disheartening activities. As his paper ran out, ever resourceful, Livingstone resorted to tearing pages out of books and then using old newspaper to write his journals. And even when ink ran dry, he managed to make his own using berry juice and twigs. And here we have those last pages brought back in the basis of his final posthumous book, his last journals. And one of the images to illustrate that book was a page from the journal itself. Now, such poor writing paper and such poor ink had faded even by the time they'd been first returned to Britain. But now, 125 years later, that text has been resurrected thanks to a partnership project involving the National Library of Scotland, which is using different technical lights, allows the text to be resurrected as never before, so that we can once again read Livingstone's final words. And these images, created over 150 years ago, are still popular today. Since Livingstone's death, his illustrations have continued to be used and reused, sometimes for marketing and advertising. Here we have him in children's comics and children's jigsaws, as well as stamps and more inappropriately, whiskey, tobacco, and French chocolate.